Blog Talk Radio.
Show. I'm Don Allen. Over at Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, how are you doing, sir?
Real good, Mr. Allen, on this holiday for some, if you will, and not for others. We must remember our Native American brothers who, the Native American nations don't celebrate Thanksgiving. I think we can understand it. Sometime, I got to tell you, Don, I don't know why we, as the sons and daughters of the Africans, celebrate Thanksgiving because we certainly did not come along at a time when we should have been thankful of being in bondage and slavery. But I guess we're thankful for finally being freed, whatever that means. What's going on, Don?
Yeah, I agree.
You know, politics.
Well, I like
going out left and right. What's happening?
Yeah, that's right. I like to let people know if you're watching on Facebook Live, Mr. Edwards, I'm broadcasting on Facebook Live also. You're going to have to go to the Blog Talk Radio link on my Facebook page and click in so you can hear Mr. Edwards. And I appreciate that, Brian, Mary,
Michael. Oh, wow, they
can't
hear me? They didn't hear me? Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, they have to turn on their computers or their smartphone device to the link on my page, and it will pop right up. So just use your cell phone, click it. It will take you right to Blog Talk Radio, and we're live right now on the air. But, Ms. Edwards, getting back to that. Oh, yeah, by the way, our call-in number is 347-426-3904. That's 347-426-3904. I'm actually broadcasting from home today. If you hear the dog in the background, it's a new puppy that my wife wanted for the kids. I did not choose that. Anyway, there's a lot going on, Mr. Edwards, and I just got a call tonight.
Like 2 weeks from both. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. And I got a call tonight, and this source just wanted to remain unnamed at this time, but I guess it looks like, from what this source is talking about, that one of Governor Mark Dayton's commissioners might get to squeeze, or as they're saying now on social media, he might have done the Al Franken. And so,
is that right?
We're trying to be professional journalists here. I don't want to spurt out any names, but it's very interesting. And I mean, I'm just wondering what it has to do with human rights. So,
Commissioner of Human Rights is the protector of the, you know, the laws and the rights of people. I mean, I hope people aren't suggesting, my God, that Kevin Lindsay is about to join the group of the fallen, if you will.
Well, you know what? I don't know. I mean, it's always a possibility, I guess. But, you know, 8 minutes ago, Star and Tribune, actually, I'm not going to give Star and Tribune the credit. 8 minutes ago, the Huffington Post just released a story saying that there are four more women that came forward in regards to Al Franken. And the two accusers are telling the Huffington Post that it was her story was similar to Lindsay Menzies' story. The first woman said, he grabbed my buttocks doing a photo op. And to stay fair, but, you know, I asked people tonight, Mr. Edwards, for the show to the show was titled, Do You Think, you know, Minnesota Senator Al Franken should resign. Yes, why? No, why? So I hope people light up the phone lines and give us some explanations of their choice on that. So, yeah, there's a lot of craziness going on, and it set the tone and the tenor for, you know, some of the conservatives, the people on my side of the table, are saying that this is a war against men. And if this is a war against men, it's resembling the war against crime, which attacks a group of people also. Yeah.
Is that right? Oh.
So, okay, yes, sir.
I don't know of any significant mafia figures that have been put in jail here recently, but if that's what people want to believe, I mean, a war against crime, right? It may be a war against the communities of color. And I tell you, Donald Trump can't stop pounding on black folks under all conditions. You know, he's in a hell of a battle now with a young basketball player for UCLA. you know. But anyways, I guess we have to wait to see what's happening. The long time, in fact, now the longest serving member of the United States House of Representatives, John Conyers, admitting to a series of incidents and liaisons, if you will. You know, his wife, unfortunately, was sent to prison for a couple of years here back in 2011 because of taking bribes as a member of the Detroit City Council. You know, they had been quite the political power group there in Detroit. I hope nothing like that happens here in the Twin Cities.
And before we go on, again, all you folks tuning in on Facebook Live, you need to go to the Facebook page and go to blogtalkradio.com/The Ron and Don Show. But, Mr. Edwards, you just said something. You just said something that struck a nerve with me because those three basketball players that were in China when Trump was in China about the same time, you know, that got released, and I need to ask you your opinion on this. I want to tell you my point of view from the right, and you tell me as a historian and the elder statesman if I'm right on or not because, you know, I can take criticism. So you have these three basketball players that are shoplifting from three stores in China, from the police report that was published by the Huffington Post and a couple of other news agencies. And so three different stores, and, you know, China has some of the best high-end surveillance in the world. So they're caught red-handed. They are arrested. The minimum term for each of those people in China is 17 years, period.
Okay. 17 minimum. Now? I thought it was some people. The president said it was 10. Some others said it was 4. So now they're Huffington Post.
Yeah, I saw numbers from 10 to 25. So I took an average and I said 17. So, but we'll go with 10. Well, 10 years. 10 years is still too long. But I don't know what Trump said. I'm very curious about what he said to the Chinese leader to let them boys get on an airplane and go back to UCLA. But what bothers me is the father of one of the boys that said, you know, that, you know, he just doesn't care about Trump. Trump, you know, he dismissed it, you know, dismissed it. And Trump fired back on Twitter saying I should have left him in jail. So this is very interesting because it speaks to race relationships in the United States and what's happening, what's going on. And I to me, if you don't like President Trump, that's cool. You don't have to like him, but if my kid was locked up for doing something stupid in a foreign country like that, where it's not like a United States prison, okay, but he got them out and they were able to come back to the United States, I would at least say thank you. So that's my point.
Well, a couple things, Don, as it pertains to accurateness and et cetera, as it pertains to the Mr. Ball, the father of one of the young men from the University of UCLA, who had been suspended indefinitely by the University of California at Los Angeles. But first of all, you know, one of the reasons that the father, you know, kind of burnt Donald Trump on this was Donald Trump said the same thing that you just said, kind of thing. They in jail and et cetera. They were never really in jail. Don, they were held under house arrest at the hotel that they were registered in. So they were never in a Chinese prison, you know, in a dark cell dungeon.
Oh, yeah, I'm very clear on that. Yeah, I understand that.
Are you? Okay, yep. So because that was one of the reasons that there was a serious issue between the father, Mr. Bell, and President Trump, because Trump got it all wrong when he kept saying that they were in jail. Now, as far as the apology, the young men made an apology at the press conference. We watched the press conference, and they specifically went into a great detail of thanking. They apologized to the United States, to the university, to their teammates, and et cetera. And then they thanked the president of the United States for getting them out. Now, it was Donald Trump that initiated the commentary from the very get-go, before anybody had even had a chance to thank him for whatever action he took, when he said, "I hope that they have enough sense to thank me for getting him out of jail." See, he said jail. Well, you know, that raised some questions about just how knowledgeable he was, even though he was in Southeast Asia at the time that this was happening, obviously. But, you know, he apparently wasn't sharp enough, he being president. So anyways, that created a problem between him and the father, who is a brother that that certainly stands up and says what he needs to say. And, in fact, in a long discussion with a commentator from our CNN, he had to correct Cuomo, the white commentator who was sitting in for Don Lemon. He had to correct him because Cuomo kept saying jail, in jail, got him out of jail, got him out of jail. And, you know, that's more than splitting hairs, because they were never placed in jail. And that kind of meant that the authorities in China were going to give them proper consideration, if you will. Now, the president never really said that he spoke directly to President Ping, if you will. He kind of made it appear that he did. It was kind of like what he did in the case of the young black sergeant brutally tortured and murdered in Niger, if you will, when he tried to leave the impression that he had had the conversation with the widow of Sergeant Johnson. It appeared that he didn't really have the kind of conversation that he said he had, because there were people in the car, including Congresswoman Wilson. Now, you take all that, you put it in place. The father kept asking Cuomo on CNN just specifically, what did the president do? Because the final authority with you know, releasing the young man, sending him all back to the United States, because they knew there would be punishment here, was the president of China, a yellow man. Okay, that's who made the determination. He runs China. Donald Trump doesn't run China. So they've gotten into that. Now, these young men are being punished, if you will. They've been suspended indefinitely. They could miss as many as four or five. They could miss the whole season. I don't know, you know. But it wasn't like they were involved in espionage, if you will, or they murdered someone or they blew up something. They were acting like young 18-year-old idiots have a tendency to act sometimes. And that was that they were in there shoplifting. I'm like you. I don't know what they were thinking about. First of all, there aren't a whole lot of 6'7" black men in China, okay?
No,
China
no.
China is pretty much of a homogeneous country. Yeah, so when they, mm-hmm. you know, when they went into the stores in this major Chinese city, they should have, you know, taken note that they were, you know, something that kind of caught the attention of everyone. But, you know, they're 18 years old, going 19. Hopefully they will understand what's happened. Hopefully this will not end their collegiate career, though my long experience tells me that they may have to go ahead and transfer from UCLA to some other institution in California. I'm not sure. But, you know, given what's going on in the world, that certainly was not the most important thing. Now, what made it become important, in my estimation, Don, was not the shoplifting. It was the back and forth between the black father, who, you know, was not afraid to challenge Donald Trump about the authenticity of what Donald Trump tried to imply. Notice what I said, tried to imply, not said, that,
okay.
that he had all the world to do with getting these young men freed, if you will. So, you know, they've got that discussion going on. They'll go back and forth for a while until we have another catastrophe, disaster, or Donald Trump wakes up at 5 a.m. in the morning and decides to put his foot on somebody's neck. But these young men
okay.
are being punished. Okay. That's what everybody wants, is for the Negroes to be punished, and then they are being punished.
But you know what? I don't want them to be punished, but, you know, you go to a foreign country and, you know, that athletes, especially basketball players at that level, at the UCLA and any major college, they have a sense of privilege, to say the least. I mean, we saw a lot of stuff here with some of the Minnesota guys. But why would you go to a foreign country and think that you're slicker than the people who live there at 6'7"? Walking
Don,
around. I got a problem with that.
Well, that's why I said 6'7". Yeah, I have no idea. You know, someone will have to ask them that at some point in time. What were they thinking about? Again, they're just 18 years old. They don't think clear. But let me just say this, Don. this is not the first time that Americans of any persuasion or level, if you will, of importance and et cetera, has gone to somebody else's country and shoplifted.
yeah, you're true.
I
That's
mean,
right.
Well, this is not anything new. Mm-hmm.
Personally, me from
but
the
phone
right.
Phone lines are open. Hopefully people are hearing what
phone
I'm saying
open.
And how I'm responding. Phone
yeah.
lines are open. You know, maybe we'll get a call.
Phone lines are wide
open. Yeah,
The number is 347-426-3904. The phone lines are open. You can hear yourself on the radio. Give us a call. Well, I just like to say, I mean, I appreciate what Trump did or did not do, but I'm glad the brothers came back on the airplane and, you know, it's unfortunate. But, yeah, something will happen eventually. And hopefully they don't have to transfer, but usually, like you said, in this case, they got to make a move. So I'm glad they're back on American soil because that could have been a catastrophe for Trump and his administration.
Yeah. They hadn't been on a basketball exhibition tour and did not have the power of a major university, University of California at Los Angeles. Could have been, you know, if they'd have been some brothers over there got caught selling some dope, then they would have had a bad time, like if they were somebody white selling some dope. Because in a lot of those Asian countries, it's pretty brutal. They're lucky they weren't in a place like Singapore or Malaysia or et cetera. But, hey, that's what it is. But we've got our own problems here in the United States. I was following closely the revelations that have come out that have cost a couple of Minnesota representatives, one Republican, one Democrat, so it's equal opportunity.
Yeah.
And looks like a couple of black women were involved in bringing down these powerful Minnesota elected officials, if you will. We have a Miss Walker. And we also have a young lady who apparently at one time worked for one of our local churches and had gone to work over there at the state capitol. And she brought down the other, the senator who announced his retirement, quote unquote, resignation. So it looks like a couple African-American women, made a difference out there because normally, whatever happens to African American women is considered, you know, non important.
Exactly. And you know what's gonna happen here, Mr. Edwards, what I'm thinking that it's not over with. Because you got a lot of folks ducking and hiding right now. I'm talking about
nonprofit leaders. You've indicated that it appears that people are hinting now that the Commissioner of Human Rights has some situations he's looking at. My God, that would be terrible if that's the member.
And I mean, you got folks, very powerful people, which I'm not going to name at this point, but very powerful people are they're more nervous than a cat in a room full of rocking chairs locally here in the Twin Cities. And this has gone on for a long time, and we've heard these stories. These stories are not made up, but at the time, the people in power, and I'm talking about, like, local nonprofits, very powerful. You know, things happen. You know, Mr. Edwards, you know Mr. Tucker. Mr. Tucker always says when there's money and sex on the table, the pants are down around the ankles like panties every time. And so things happen that aren't that great. And some of these people, I mean, I think it's a way to kind of clean up or drain the swamp in a way. Because this has been going on for a long time, and some of the women, you know, from J.D. Hoyt to the Monte Carlo to Aqua, you know, you if you travel the club circuit in town and you've been to these places, I mean, you know, and it's not hard to figure that out. So let's see what happens.
Well, but we're a forgiving society and a forgiving nation now because if we can forgive our president for his activities, which was captured on tape, I mean, you know, what the heck, we can give up, you know. The sense of outrage and vendetta and et cetera. You know, like I said, once the country accepted the conduct of President Donald Trump, because they really would have liked to got something on Barack Obama, didn't happen. But you know, if you can get as many women who turned around and voted for Donald Trump in the 2016 election And then it means we are a pretty forgiving nation, so we'll see what's happening. I mean, you know, like I said,
we're John Conyers
up there in Michigan. Yeah, but, you know, John Conyers has been there since 1966, and he's done his job. He wins with a plurality of 80%. I mean, nobody does that, you know, even in the South, I mean, where you can really control the ballot. And by the way, if we can as a nation accept what Roy Moore down there, good Republican, if we can accept what he
Mr.
did,
Roy
and,
Moore.
You know, we can – yeah, we can forgive Al Franken, you know, and it'll be up to the voters, just like they say it'll be up to the voters of Alabama to decide if Roy Moore goes to the United States Senate. It'll be up to the voters of Minnesota in, what is it, 2020, who will determine if Al Franken will get a third term. I mean, that's the standard that now has been set. Based on the forgiveness, you know, of many in this country during the election of 2016. If they can forgive Donald, I mean, they can John and Al and and Roy
and Bill. They forgave Bill Clinton, you know. So if Bill
well,
Clinton,
you know, not really. No.
I mean, everybody.
Not totally correct on that. No. Bill Clinton was impeached. And the impeachment included a censure of him, but did not remove him from office. Now, people say that, but Bill Clinton was impeached, and people, you know, need to kind of go back and you know, remind yourself and take a look at the procedure that happened in the Senate of the United States in receiving the articles of impeachment from the House of Representatives. So. Old Bill, you know, he kind of got his hand slapped a little bit, but you got to remember, he was in his second term, and by the Constitution, he couldn't run for a third term anyway, so he knew politically he was through. You know, and Bill Clinton has tried to run for anything else since then. He knows, you know, but Monica Lewinsky said whatever it was, she enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was a party. Monica Lewinsky, she... You know,
yeah,
she's out there.
In
she
fact,
got her
it was in the pantry. It was in the pantry in the kitchen of the White House. But hey, you know, phone lines are open because the real question is: should Al Franken resign, or should Al Franken continue his term and let the voters decide in 2020? You know.
Yeah, but I'll tell you, you're right.
It's out of control.
Yeah, we got a lot of people on Facebook Live watching. Again, we're asking the question.
I bet they are.
Should Al Franken resign or should he just stay there? Should we forgive him? You can call us at 347-426-3904 and be live on the radio and have this conversation. So we got a lot of people in the queue, but no one's hitting the phone lines. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. You can give us a call and we can have this conversation. I'd like for someone
to
call and let's hear your point of view.
Yeah, well,
it's very interesting
moving on to another issue, Don, one right quick. We got $1.2 million just came in from Odegaard Sessions, our Attorney General of the United States. He just awarded the city of Minneapolis $1.2 million to hire immediately 20 new police officers and start getting onto this deportation. Start getting these people up and out of here, man. And by the way, the president yesterday announced that 58,000 black Haitians, must leave the United States by 2019. I'd like to hear some of the observation by some of our listening audience around the world on that, you know, the black Haitians. Why is it we never have any problem with the Russians? You know, I don't hear nothing about the Russians. Man, the Russians involved in all kinds of criminal activity right here in the Twin Cities.
Yeah, I don't hear anything ever about a Russian. Yeah, never.
Yeah. And they're involved in all kinds of criminal activity. But anyways, president has announced 58,000 Haitians must leave by 2019. And I think he's setting it up for the Dreamer situation where, what is it, over 200,000 or better Mexicans, Latino, Hispanics, whatever, however they want to identify themselves, could be deported in mass deportations, if you will. So kind of makes you wonder about that attack on two Border Patrol officers just outside of El Paso. It kind of makes you wonder, did it really happen? Was that fake news? Or did, you know, somebody try to enhance the discussion about we need the wall. By the way, where are we at with that wall, man? We gonna start building that wall?
I don't think Mexico's gonna pay for the wall. There is a fence, Mr. Evers, from what I understand, from Google Maps, that goes all the way along the border. So a wall might be metaphoric in a way, you know, because the fence is up.
Okay.
But still, you know, you still see people running, you know, in like that night vision. You still see people running into the United States. So, I mean, I don't really know what that's about. And I know that there is a fence around there, but yeah, there's not that much talk of a wall or anything else. And so,
the president said we was going to give us a wall. We were going to get a wall. In fact, they do have, there are six models of a wall that's down there just outside of San Diego. And members of the Congress have been going in, flying into San Diego, and they've been taking a look at the wall. And the manufacturers of these six walls are making a pitch. I guess that's the right word to use, making a pitch for their product, if you will, to be the main wall. You know, it's kind of like when you go to Menards and you're looking at some wallpaper or something like that. You know, the guy comes out with the book and opens it up. That's the way they're doing with the wall.
Yeah.
They have them. They're sitting there in this. I think it's a Marine reserve facility, and because you know it's guarded, et cetera. And they've been looking at that for the last couple of weeks. Congress is going to make some kind of decision on who they're going to. It's kind of like awarding an architect a contract, you know, to paint the ceiling of the Congress, Michelangelo.
We don't have a call yet, but I need to explain one more time, and then I'm going to shut Facebook Live down because people aren't getting it. If you don't go to the link, you can't hear the show. You just hear me talking. You don't hear Mr. Edwards. So you have to go to the link. That's why there's these long dead spaces. So if you call 347-426-3904, the show will start playing on your cell phone. I'm going to shut down Facebook Live, and you guys are going to have to call the show if you have a question. So, yeah, that took care of that.
Oh, okay.
Are
they able to hear me, or how they doing?
Have like 120 people. Wow. And hopefully they'll call in on the radio because they're just watching on Facebook Live. But yeah.
Well, Well, tell them to call because it'll go into your piece there and et cetera. Hopefully they've been able to hear a couple words from me. But yeah, we wait on any calls ahead. Again, the conversation is should Al Franken resign, if you will. Also, the rotation of 58,000 black Haitians by 2019. Also, the wall. We're asking where the wall is at, and we have just received new funding here in Minneapolis for our police department, $1.2 million, to immediately hire 20 new officers working closely with ICE, the Immigration Naturalization Service, to start doing the roundups here in the city of Minneapolis. So we're interested in hearing your reflections and your thinking on this. By the way, one other piece, Don, for those that are out there, the latest word is that a newly elected council person, Jenkins, may be the front runner to become the next president of the Minneapolis City Council, becoming the first African-American to head up that body. That'd
be beautiful, Mr. Edwards. That would be beautiful.
Yeah.
I like Andrea Jenkins.
Diversity. Yeah. Council person newly elected from the 8th Ward, Democrat, by the way, for our listening audience around the world and domestically. That council person, first transgender, would become the new council president certainly joining our first African-American police chief. By the way, I see that Mayor-elect Melvin Carter III in St. Paul, the first African-American elected as mayor of the city of St. Paul, has put his transition staff into play. I'm not hearing as much about Jacob Fry, who is a mayor-elect of the city of Minneapolis. And I'm not understanding why we're not hearing a little bit more about that. I know there are a series of meetings. There was a meeting this past Saturday at one of our local junior high schools, Franklin Junior High School, in which a group is putting together a list of recommendations, demands, and resolutions as it pertains to Minneapolis, though they keep saying North Minneapolis. I mean, you know, black folks live all out throughout the city of Minneapolis. Now, this comes, by the way, Don, we're not supposed to really talk about this. This comes at a time where this past weekend we had six African-Americans shot and wounded during a 26-hour, 27-hour period. Four in one shooting at outside of a house along the 3600 block of Emerson Avenue North in Minneapolis. So we're continuing to shoot them up here in our beloved Shangri-La. So all those things are out there. We're waiting to hear your calls.
Yeah, call phone lines are right open. By the way, Mr. Edwards, November 15th, Mayor-elect Jacob Frey on Wednesday announced that his transition team will be led by former Minneapolis Mayor R.T. Ryback. The Northside Achievement Zone, Sandra Samuels, Minneapolis Regional Labor Federation President Chelsea Gubnis, and those three are going to be leading his transition team. Samuels, Ryback.
And that was announced when? That was in what paper? Website?
Star Tribune on 9:59 p.m. on November 15th, 2017. And Frey's campaign manager, former DFL State Representative Joel Radovich, will be his chief of staff in the mayor's office. And his other staffers will be Heidi Ritchie and Zach Farley. Joe's campaign
is not mentioned in here. Okay, so the announcement was made on the 15th. Okay, all right. Then.
Yeah.
So
I just Googled it. Because I didn't hear anything, so I wanted to Google. And they kind of snuck this in under the radar because this airs. I'm looking at the story on the online. It's just a few paragraphs. It was like, okay, we ain't going to say too much, and we're not going to make it big news. And
Well, this is more important than that. I mean, we need to know whose transition staff is going to, who they are. Now, there appears to be, one African-American that would be Ms. Sandra Samuels, is that right, or is there another one on there? The rest of them names didn't sound like anybody from the African American community. Read those names again to us, Don, so our listening audience is up to speed.
Those names are Sandra Samuels from the Northside Achievement Zone, Minneapolis Regional Labor Federation President, Chelsea Glaubitz.
That's a Caucasian. Okay.
Yeah, of course. And that's it. Those three, Ryback, Sandra Samuels, and I was wondering why we didn't hear that much from Sandra Samuels during the election. She was just sitting back with Jacob Frey. So was pretty interesting.
Jacob knew what he was going to do. R.T. Ryback, who doesn't have a very kind sense of feelings about African Americans. This is the same, white mayor of 18 years ago that said that his first task would be to change the face of Negro leadership in Minneapolis when he was elected.
Oh yeah, and he screwed up. We do have a call.
Okay, go ahead.
Call you live on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Ron and Don.
I'm doing great. How are you?
Hi, how are you? Good.
Okay, go ahead.
I had some questions I wanted to bring up regarding all these sexual assault cases.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead.
So when I read, for example, question number one, when I read a story about some guy or senator or whoever having sex with someone under legal age, the media will rightfully so, they'll report it as pedophilia and the guy was a predator, child abuser, sexual abuser, all the evil things that we're all against. And then when I read more details, not every case, but some cases, the story goes that the girl will say, well, no, he didn't physically abuse me, he didn't mentally abuse me, he didn't force himself on me, I actually wanted to have sex with him. So I was wondering to myself, the first question I have is, is the media, when they use terms like pedophile, predator, child abuse, sexual abuse, are they mixing in the evil guys who are doing the evil things with the normal guys who are not doing those things?
When you say normal guys,
that's an interesting question.
I'm
go ahead.
I'm trying to figure out
and
how
then I'll
to
follow
how order.
You. And I'll follow you.
Okay. Now,
yeah.
The evil guys, which would be the guys that screw around with the kids, and then the guys that are, like, grabbing butts and things like that. So you're separating. You're making one eviler than the other one. Am I correct?
No, no, no. So, for example, let's say there was one guy who was having sex with a girl who's 17, and there's another guy
okay.
who wants to have sex with a six-year-old child. Those are not the same things, and yet they're using the same type of words, pedophile, predator, child abuse, sexual abuse. For two people, would you agree there's a difference between a 17-year-old young woman and a six-year-old child? If one guy wanted to have sex with a girl in high school, and another guy wanted to have sex with an elementary
school, can this person hear me, Don? Yeah, let me answer him, Don. Let me answer him. Well, first of all, you keep saying a 17-year-old. Now, as it pertains to anybody underage, let's deal with absolute specificity here, okay? As it pertains to anyone that is underage, if you will, which in most states is considered to be 18 years of age, the only person in question is the Roy Moore situation, the gentleman running for a former judge, running for a senator in the state of Alabama. That young lady at the time of that situation 40 years ago was 14 years old. Now, in her case, it seemed to be appropriate with regards to the identification of a pedophile or sexual assault, because I watched the press conference that she had 3 days ago where she specifically talked in terms of, unfortunately, how the abuse took place. He took her to his home, if you will. He gave her kind of a drink. And then it was interesting. He put a kind of a rug on the floor, a spread actually. He put a spread on the floor, and then he told her to take another drink and relax. And then he came back to the room. This is her testimony now, in just his shorts. And then she said he then began to molest her, had sex with her. Required her to perform oral sex on him. He performed oral sex on her and et cetera. Now, on that particular case of the 14-year-old, because I'm also waiting to see if there's any of these characters that have been involved with little children, you know, where you're talking in terms of something really bad. So we want to be absolutely clear on what we're saying, because I don't know of any 17-year-old, if you will, but I do know of a 14-year-old, and this is tied into the Roy Moore case. Now,
well, can I address
the Roy Moore case?
Can I get a chance to address?
But you called to put it out there. In the Roy Moore case, where you may have gotten confused by 17-year-old, was that one of the reasons that he was trespassed from the big mall there in Gaddesden, Alabama, was he was trespassed. Police trespassed. They may have confirmed that record because he was hitting on 16 and 17-year-old girls at the mall there in Gaddesden, Alabama. And so people started making complaints, and it had been going on for a while. And then the security guards and the Gaddesden, Alabama Police Department were given notification. And it had to be politically a tough situation because old Roy, I do believe during that particular period, was a judge on the state Supreme Court where he was actually removed. But, you know, that's another issue. And so to your question, you know, that question really needs to be posed to the Washington Post and to those other publications, media publications, which sometimes have used those phrases in talking about Roy Moore.
But you just did the same thing. You actually just proved my point. It's not just the media. A lot of people, including yourself, you just used words like pedophile, predator, and
I was just merely repeating what you were saying, okay? I don't know what they are, but I have enough understanding of law
to make that declaration.
All right, what did we misunderstand here on the Ron and Don program? I'm
trying to have an honest debate here. You guys have to give me a chance to actually finish my point here. How many points do you want to make?
But go ahead.
Well,
make your point.
Well, you made a lot of points, so there's a lot for me to address now. So, for example, you said pedophilia, and you said
no, I didn't
that the
say pedophilia. I did not use the word. That's your word. That's a word you must be familiar with.
Okay, fine. I'll just skip past pedophilia. You said 18 is the law. 18 is not the law in America. This is the other question I wanted to ask you guys. Why do so many people believe that the law is 18 in America, as if everyone under 18 is physically and mentally a child, and I guess when they turn 18, they magically become physically and mentally
that,
a woman?
Sir? You know that's a question.
You're not letting me finish.
You know what you have
finish.
To do? You have to ask the members of the legislature, okay?
Okay, but
ask
you said yourself.
Ask the people who incorporate the law. Now, let me just tell you this. In the state of Minnesota, to take an action against
a
quote-unquote person considered to be a non-adult in the state of Minnesota, anyone under the age of 18, you're going to the penitentiary, okay? So what's your next question? What's the next question you want to know? I didn't miss anything. I'm quite clear on what I'm saying.
Are you actually having a debate with me, or do you just want to over-talk me, interrupt me, and tell me I'm wrong?
I'm not here to debate you. We're giving you an opportunity to talk on the national and international airways. I'm not here to debate
okay.
you.
Yeah. Oh, I thought this was a debate. Okay. I guess it's not a debate.
No, it's
okay,
not
so
a debate.
Tell
you. No, see, you got that wrong. It's not a debate.
Okay.
You asked
so
a series
then let
of questions.
Then let me rephrase. Why is it okay for you to go on uninterrupted, but I can't go on uninterrupted? Why do you interrupt me, but you don't like when I interrupt
because
you?
Because I'm controlling the microphone. I'm doing the Donald Trump.
Okay.
You got
gotcha.
It?
Okay, Donald.
Is it clear,
okay,
is it clear to you now?
Okay,
is it concise?
So here's
do you have,
yeah,
you have
very,
clarity?
Very,
okay. I'm
yeah,
playing, I'm the role,
okay.
I'm Big Brother.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
This is
so
1984.
The age of consent in most of America is not 18. It is 16 in most states, 17 in some states, 18 in some states. So it's
what is it in Alabama?
Sex.
What is it in Alabama? Can you tell us what
it
is
I don't
in Alabama?
I don't remember.
Oh, yeah, we're right. Yeah, you're kind of nervous
okay.
on that because we got the law book right here in front of us. But go
okay.
ahead, go
okay.
ahead. So what your point is what, sir? You're
it,
saying
my,
16,
my point
17,
is, my point is
what's
threefold,
point?
Actually. My point
threefold?
Is threefold.
Okay,
my,
yeah, but you had
yeah.
six or sevenfold. But let's try to kind of wrap it up, okay? Let's kind of wrap it up. We've got other callers holding.
Okay, I'll make it easier for you. You're right. Everyone
no,
else
you don't
is
make
wrong.
It easy
you
for me.
You're
make it easy for yourself. Make it easy for yourself.
Yeah, I'm doing it. You're right. Everyone is wrong. No one can interrupt you. You're the king. You're right on everything.
Man, now you're picking up on it. Very good. I just got through telling you, I'm Big Brother. This is 1984. George Orwell.
I mean, no, but
hey, caller.
Okay. Yeah, but this is
hey,
this
caller,
is
caller,
but this
caller,
is one of the.
Yeah, go ahead. My colleague
hey,
is speaking because all you're doing is taking up airtime.
Appreciate your call.
You took more time than I did. You took more time than I did. You took more time than I did. Then.
Okay, Mr. Edwards, I'm going to let him call back. Caller, you're live on the air.
Yes.
The Ron and Don Show. Go ahead.
You know, I was listening to the conversation. And what people is missing the boat is that there's no federal law that establishes an age for, let's say, marriage, because people in marriage, they go do whatever they want to in their bedroom. Those laws, those ages are set by the states and the parents and the courts in those states. And you made mention of Alabama. The minor age for Alabama is 16 years of age. And that requires parents' consent. Now, you can go less than that, but you also require parent consent and also judicial consent. So I just wanted to put that out there. People put the emotions in, talking about what's right and wrong, and you really won't see something. Go into other countries where it's set by culture, and some countries may have the age for marriage as low as 9 years of age, 12 years of age. And it's been that way. Here in the United States, age limits have went up since the late part of the 1800s when you had farm society, agriculture society, should I say. And at that time, people were getting married very young. But, no, it's set by every state in the union, and they're different.
Am I still on?
Are you still
Hello?
On?
Yes, hi. Yeah. So
no, you're not
to
still
what the,
on.
To what the guy just...
Hey, young man. Someone else is talking.
Yeah.
Pause for a minute.
Yeah, so that's basically all I wanted to say, sir.
Yeah, it got silent. That's why I said something. Relax. He was done.
Can I say something? How are you on the air with us still when I just muted your conversation?
And I asked for permission, by the way. I wasn't being rude. I don't know why you guys are being jerks.
I'm not being a jerk. I'm just asking, how are you on the air with us when I muted your call?
I don't know, but, you know, to be honest with you, I'm entertaining and informative, so it's better to keep me on because it's going to be really good ratings, actually. Trust me on this. I'm not boring.
Yeah, we're going to try this. Yeah, he's gone. All right. Well, sir, thank you for your call. I appreciate it. Area code 314, and we're on every Wednesday night. Hopefully you call in next week or listen next week. We appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, you know one other thing, sir, real quick.
Go ahead,
on
sir.
Roy Moore, that lady that made mention about what happened when she was 14. If you listen to what she said, she said that I would never touch a man's penis, especially an erect one. Well,
neither would I.
And then another lady recently came in and made mention about her being in a car with him. And she said that he reached over and locked the door where I couldn't get out. Well, duh, that button on the door prevents people from the outside coming in, not from the inside getting out. All you had to do was pull the handle. So those two highly suspected testimonies, and plus that the statute of limitations.
I'm sorry, sir. If I could, I apologize, because, Mr. Allen, you weren't paying attention. I was cut off. I don't understand how that happened.
Yeah. Do you know what? Hold just a minute, sir. Caller, just a second. Mr. Harris, let me tell you something. That guy that we were talking to, somehow, some way, he was muted and then cut off so we could go to the next callers, but you could still hear him as loud as day.
I heard him when he came back on, but that should not have given him any latitude or technical capabilities to have been able to interfere with my call-in, with my line.
No,
you and I are
not
on the same line.
I saw that.
Yeah. So anyway, that was NSA, but you were talking to this caller that you have now. Continue on. We still have 15 minutes left.
No, you guys go ahead. I just want to get those 2 points out there. I really appreciate your show.
All
right. Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, that person that you got, he cannot get back in. He's cut off. But let's get any other callers we have. This is fun.
Yeah, we got –
obviously,
we've
touched the hot spot.
We have a friend of the show. He's calling on the line now. Come on in. What's your question, sir?
Well, greetings. I want to wish you guys a happy Thanksgiving. This is Mr. M.
Thank you, sir.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you, Thanksgiving.
M.
Happy Thanksgiving, M.
And I just came in late, so I'm not sure exactly where you guys are. You can maybe briefly fill me in. I think you were talking a little bit about, you know, Al Franken and some of the shenanigans that's going on in the political world.
No, actually, let me do this quickly because Mr. Allen was able to be on for about 2 minutes. Somewhere or another, we had a caller call in, very shrewd, sleek-talking Caucasian, who actually was able to tamper with our internal line, and actually I was cut off for a couple minutes, had to call back. But what we've been talking about is that obviously we pushed a hot button, and we do have 13 minutes left. We were talking about, you know, should, you know, Al Franken, you know, resign and et cetera, and then that got us into discussions about John Conyers in Michigan, if you will. But we got to talking about Roy Moore, and it sounded like folks didn't really want us to talk about Roy Moore. But that's what we've kind of been talking about. Should Al Franken, give it the Minnesota flavor, should Al Franken resign?
Well, you know, that was kind of interesting. I'm sorry I missed some of that because, you know, what I'm noticing now is that our great president is really, you know, he's come out, you know, and just said, you know, Roy Moore said he didn't do it. So, you know, what are you talking about? He said he didn't do it. You know,
and that's all that matters. That's right. That's right.
And that's all that matters, because
Mr. Allen,
he's become, you know, and that's another frightening thing with our current president. I mean, it seems like he's really becoming emboldened. And, I mean, he's really moving toward, I believe, at least seeing himself as, you know, something like as a dictator. That he can tweet.
Well, he does see himself as a dictator. In fact, I want to get Mr. Allen's reflection on this because I'm not also sure and his legal counsel in the White House should probably kind of advise him. You know, he particularly in light of also his statements about the three black basketball players from UCLA in the China situation, he's come up against more than he expected in the father, Mr. Ball. But he is awful close as it pertains to violating common law, if you will, and the articles that protect the doctrine of innocent until proven guilty. But you're right. He's so comfortable with his power and authority that he is making comments about situations, because Roy Moore is looking at the – and we need to talk about that. We have you with us, and then Don's with us here. It's going to be interesting, and I have to say this, is that it looks like that Mitch McConnell, Republican of Kentucky, Speaker of Majority Leader of the House, is really putting together a plan that if Roy Moore is able on the, what is it, gentlemen, the 12th of December to prevail and win the seat from Alabama, that they are prepared with immediate recommendations from the Ethics Committee of the United States Senate to deny Roy Moore the right to take his seat. In fact, the way the game really goes, I'm surprised no one has really picked up on it, if either in the House or the Senate, you're getting ready for the massive swearing in, and I from, you know, Montana stand up and challenge the right of you, M, from Alabama to take your place, then you cannot be sworn in. You're asked to stand down. Your oath of office is not acceptable, and the matter is then referred to the Ethics Committee of the particular body, be it the U.S. House of Representatives or the United States Senate. And let me just test both of you, your memory. In modern time, the only person who effectively challenged and was reelected three times and sent back to his seat was still denied the right based on race to be seated as a representative of the House of Representatives. Was who? Do you gentlemen remember? Three times. He was expelled, and three times the voters of his congressional district voted him and sent him back. And then finally he just said, I do not want my people to continue to be represented. Mr. Allen, you can call it up on your computer there.
Adam Clayton Powell?
Adam Clayton Powell, Jr. of New York. That's right.
Yeah.
The only individual in the history of the Congress of the United States to be expelled without cause, if you will. And three times the voters of Harlem sent him back there, and finally on the third time he indicated that he would honor with reluctance what was happening, but that his district needed to be represented. Yes, Adam Clayton Powell. Now I don't think that Roy Moore got that kind of intestinal fortitude. That's where I'm at. But go ahead.
Well, I'm getting a little scared of the people of Alabama. You know, when I see women supporting him, when I see women coming out, it's almost like, you know, it's a kind of like a stereotypical, what we used to call kind of a hillbilly culture, where people that kind of live on the fringes of society, and they pretty much just do what they want to do because, you know, nobody's really looking or paying any attention. But,
right. Well, let me give you a movie for both of y'all. Think about the movie Deliverance. Do y'all remember the movie Deliverance?
I do.
Yeah, I remember the movie Deliverance.
You're doggone right. Y'all remember.
1972.
That's right. Yeah, think about Deliverance, brother. Gentlemen and what happened. But look at Mr. M, I kind of cut you off. What's your reflection about the level of mortality and morality in the beloved state of Alabama? Okay.
Well,
see, here's the thing that I say. If the 14-year-old white girl had been black, we wouldn't even be having this discussion. Oops.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's pathetic. I mean, for them to sink, you know, the low to the point of talking about, you know, dalliances and relationships with children. I mean, you know, that we've sunk to a point where, you know, this is as part of our conversation. I just, I, And it's really just, it's really, you know, and you have to be really careful because as soon as somebody says something, I mean, nobody's perfect. I mean, I think that that's the first thing we have to realize. But I personally feel that white supremacy and what has gone on in this country since day one, when this country was started, 1600s, 1500s, that white supremacy has been the order of the day. And that there's a hierarchy of white men that have always felt they could do what they want, when they want, to who they want, as long as they want, with impunity. Mm-hmm. And with a system of laws and judges and laws of their peers. Okay?
Let me cut in though and ask a question.
But I had
promised a couple people around the country who tune in to us, Mr. Allen. We've got about 5 minutes left. Do y'all think that we'll ever be able to find out what really happened to a young sergeant of the United States Armed Forces attached to the Green Beret who was brutally murdered in Niger? You think we'll ever find out? I'd ask you, Mr. M, and then Mr. Allen, my associate, did you think we'll ever find out what happened to that young man?
You know, I mean, it is such a distressing thing that now, all of a sudden, now they say they found other body parts in other areas.
Yeah.
I mean, this is really, really, really. I mean, so was there an explosion? Was there?
Give us some
explanation
topic
for this. I mean, they throw these things out there. Ugh.
Go ahead, Mr. Allen. Go ahead, my friend.
Let me interject real quick because we're at 9:26. So let me just interject another 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Talking to the colonel at Fort Snelling, he's very upset about that whole thing because he thinks that the dude was abandoned and left there, and he's not even sure that the casket, the body in the casket, is actually his.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I agree with that, and you were saying something about time, Mr. Allen. We still have about 3 minutes left. And I'm looking at the time. We still have about 3 minutes left. That's what I'm seeing. Let me just remind our international and domestic and local audiences is that the wife of Sergeant Johnson was, and her and his mother and father and others were denied, which is unprecedented according to the code of the Armed Services of the United States. They were denied the opportunity to view his body before burial. And on my television program here in the Twin Cities 3 weeks ago, I indicated that the word was, sometimes you have to listen to some of these other international broadcasts, is that he was abandoned. And at one point, CNN was announcing, I called attention to a program by Brooke Baldwin 8 days ago, and what she was going to talk about two Navy SEALs, not Green Beret, but two Navy SEALs who were sent to the area along with some private contractors, white contractors, who were working on the big drone base in northern Niger. Because there's a real controversy now about who it was that, you know, really, because you got to remember his hands were tied even when they found him. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Yeah. But, Mr. Allen, what's your quick thinking on it, brother?
Well, I just think that I don't even think that was him in the casket, and I think that he was abandoned there. I don't think he's alive, but I don't think that the guy in the casket was this lady's husband. And there's too much of that going on. People, you know, black lives are always expendable during war. We learned that in Vietnam, and we learned in Iraq and Afghanistan, and we're still learning it. So with that said, there's a problem with that that needs to be investigated. But, you know, you have the military investigating itself. So we're never going to get the truth.
Well,
right. I just think we owe it to our black service personnel in that everybody's been playing this game, starting with the NFL, about how we love our service members and et cetera. I just think we owe it to the memory of Sergeant Johnson, the African-American black, if you will, because there were two Johnsons in that group. I just think we owe it to him and all other veterans and active service persons to indicate that at least there's a couple of people who have a platform that are saying that there's something wrong with this whole narrative. And I appreciate how both of y'all responded. Jim, want to thank you, man. Have a nice holiday.
You too, gentlemen.
Yep. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
All right.
We have
John,
16
what we got
seconds.
Left? A minute,
Taylor.
30 seconds, or what?
11 seconds. 10 seconds.
Yeah. All right, take us on home, man. All right, talk to you later.
Yeah.
All right.
Yep, talk to you, man.
So with Saint Laurent, gotta kiss myself. I'm so pretty. I'm too hot. Call the police and the fireman. I'm